Welcome to episode 181 of the Left Behind Game Club. This week, we talk about PAX East 2024. Let's get right into it.
You're listening to the Left Behind Game Club.
Left Behind Game Club, our never-ending attempt to make sure that no game is left behind. I'm your host, Jacob McCourt, and today I have three friends with me. The first friend, you know her, you love her, her name is Katie Lesbrons.
Hi! We went to PAX.
Hi, are you okay?
I'm okay. I escaped the PAX plague this time, unlike West, so I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, except your Baldur's Gate 3 game, they didn't quite...
Let's not talk about it. Rest in peace okay. to a lot of people.
Second friend, Floor Marigold, hello.
Hello, I, however, did not escape the PAX plague.
No, not COVID though, right?
Oh, certainly not. Thank God.
Great. Excellent. And our third friend on the show for the second time, it's Mr. Dave Jackson from Tales from the Backlog. Hello, Dave.
Hi, thanks for having me back, and thanks for hanging out with me at PAX.
Yeah, I mean, we had to have the roomie crew
yeah.
That shared a hotel room on a podcast. It was only fair.
Yeah, I also did not escape the PAX plague. I'm still working through it.
Well, again, I'm glad that you guys are, you know, 6 out of 10 okay. It could be a lot worse. Dave, Tales from the Backlog, tell us about it.
Yeah, Tales from the Backlog is a weekly backlog games review podcast. Every episode is me with a different guest, and we pull a game from the backlog. Usually, sometimes we play a new game, and then the episode comes out 6 months later. So it's backlog territory by the time you hear it on my show. And we deep dive it as much as we can with no spoilers for a while. And then a hard break where we say, okay, spoilers are coming, jump out if you don't want to be spoiled. And we do that basically every episode. There's been like maybe 3 episodes out of 120 that don't follow that format. So that's the show. Flora's been on there a couple times. We talked about The Last of Us Part 2 and Like a Dragon Gaiden. And Jacob was on for Metal Gear Rising, the very special game there. And then Katie and I have got one in the plans in the near future as well. So, that's Tales from the Backlog.
Tease us. Can you announce it here? Can you tell us what Katie is on?
We are, special sneak preview, Left Behind Game Club exclusive. We're going to do...
World premiere!
The one and only Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yeah, Whoa. Buddy. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Well, look, we'll link the episodes that both Flora and I were on in the resources section of the podcast, and then you'll have to subscribe to the feed to check out when Katie and Dave talk about MGS3. Dave, thanks for coming. Before we start, let us remind people of all the things they need to do. Hey, if you listen to this podcast and you haven't given us a review on your podcasting platform of choice, please, please, I'm begging you, 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast. Send the podcast to a friend because, you know, that's how people hear about podcasts. And follow us on Twitter because that's where we share details about our regular schedule. We don't have any other shows planned after this for the next little while, so Twitter's the best place to find out what's going on with us. PAX East 2024 happening in Boston, Massachusetts. Dave, it is your first PAX ever. Please tell us how you felt about it.
The prevailing feeling that I had from PAX, two things. Number one, I am older than I thought I was. I feel old after that experience of so much walking around and socializing and all of that. More standing, walking, and socializing crammed into 4 days than I have had in total since like the pandemic started, I think. So that's the first thing. And then obviously games are cool, but like the thing that's going to last is like meeting the three of you and a bunch of our other friends. That's the biggest thing. It was like truly wonderful.
I'm crying, not laughing like we laughed the entire time, Dave.
Oh yeah. That's the third thing that's going to stick with me.
Jacob Zoomies.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. His brain broke. Yeah, it's fine.
I wonder if we can get it going virtually like that.
We'll try. It's a long episode, Dave. So, I mean, not as long as your episode, but it's a long one.
Yeah.
There'll be time. Flora, don't, Dave. Flora, it's your second episode. Your second PAX, right?
Yeah, second PAX. I didn't make it to West like you all did, but it was nice to come back to East, and a lot of it felt very similar. I think the overall vibe that a lot of returning like PAX attendees felt was that... It was a smaller show than the year prior. And even though the density of the people felt similar to me, the actual, like, what I could walk around and go do, there were visible gaps on the show floor and some sort of, like, I felt a little bit more of a sort of wandering feeling this year, which was kind of cool. But I think, like Dave, the thing that I was there for this year, or at least the thing that will stick with me, is largely just connecting with a lot of people that I hadn't met in person yet and yet had had relationships with remotely for a long time. So that was really gratifying. And of course, this year was also stocked full of some really interesting panels, many of which we all went to together. So,
yeah, because both Dave and you, Flora, you both met folks from like Discords mm-hmm. that you've been part of. So that must have been neat, right? Internet friends becoming real friends.
Yeah, people from my Discord server, people from like just shared Discord servers. We just happen to, you know, be like, hey, you're in this server, so like we at least agree on certain things at some level. Let's meet up. And that's always cool. And then like some actual friends that I've been talking with on Discord for years now, good to meet up with them for the first time. In addition to all like the podcasters and creators and stuff, that just, you know, people that like to hang out online and talk about games.
I mean, I made a shtick Hydro Man joke at a bar and everyone laughed and I was like, my people. I got Dave, we'll talk about this in a second, but during the DS panel, we got a whole room of 200 people to chant PictoChat, mm-hmm. which may be the highlight of my life as a creator. Katie, third packs, right?
Third packs. Yeah, same vibe. Just like getting to see people I've met before at other PAXs, meeting new people. You really do have like this sense of community that I don't find that exact thing anywhere else. Especially growing up, I didn't have like a really, really strong group of like gamer friends. Gamer, God. every time the word slips out, I cringe. So yeah, it's nice. It's like, oh, these are my people. I can talk about any of the nerdy gaming things that I want to talk about. And someone there will be like, yes, I know what you're talking about. I like that thing too. We have that in common. That and I always enjoy just talking to game developers, especially ones who are making, you know, they're very early in their developer career. They're making maybe their first game ever, and it's this project, and they've invested so much time and passion into it. And you're like, oh, like, congratulations. And also, like, and when the game is good, too, it's, like, even more gratifying. They're like, you worked so hard on this, and it's good. Like, I'm here to tell you, I love your game. I want to buy your game. And then to be able to talk about it with them is really exciting.
Yeah, there are going to be a bunch of interviews in the show, so you're going to notice it's quite long. It's because we have five interviews from devs from the floor of PAX, and at least a couple of them, this is their first game. So you will be able to hear that energy firsthand in this episode. Stay tuned. My 11th PAX, I've been to a lot of them.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry, before you say that.
No, please.
I will echo feeling old. Because I got home and thought I wasn't that tired and then went to bed at 9 p.m., which is very early for me. And I did not set an alarm because I had gotten up early the past 4 days. And I thought, I don't need to set an alarm. I'm just going to wake up. I woke up at 1 p.m. I slept for 16 hours straight without waking up. And I got up and I was like, oh, I was tired. Clearly, mm-hmm. I was completely exhausted. PAX is tiring. Great time, but tiring.
Yeah, for a second, so I decided to bring a couple of different pairs of shoes because, you know, sometimes this is a overshare as hell. Sometimes I have toe problems at conventions. So I brought multiple pairs of shoes, and the last day I wore a pair of Air Jordans for the first time. And, like, bad news, I was not in a good place that last day. So, Katie, I empathize and I feel you.
Not the tootsies.
My 11th PAX, the floor was weird this year. Like, Nintendo had a DLC for Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. It's been out for a year. That's what they were showing, and an art installation. Devolver wasn't there. Sega wasn't there. Yacht Club wasn't there. Like, there were mainstays of PAX that were not there. And look, there was cool stuff in the corners of PAX that, you know, occupied my time. But missing a lot of those big players and also the organization of the floor just, like, sort of drives me crazy when people put a booth number on things. You never know because they don't put the numbers on the rows. They don't have numbers, you know, on the booth. So it's always a mad dash to figure things out. But like y'all said, it was nice to get away, to go to panels, to have beers with friends, and play some great video games. So with that, I'd like to ask a question to the panel. We've talked about this a little bit, but this is from Control Alt Noob, our friend Control Alt Noob. She asks, I would love to know, what is a typical day at PAX, if there is such a thing?
Well, I think it depends on the person. I think that's the thing about PAX, you can kind of make it whatever you want it to be. You can go to panels, you can go to, out West there was a bunch of exhibits you could go to. For me, it is get up early, get ready, walk to the convention center, on the way grab a coffee and something to eat, and I play as many games as humanly possible. Like, that is my mission of PAX. I probably played like 25 games. I don't know. And then I go out to dinner with some friends at the end of the day, and it's a great time. And then crash and do it again. That's my PAX.
I noticed my approach slightly differ this year from year one, where last year I was definitely taking the binge as many games as you possibly can while on the show floor approach. And this year I felt a lot more standoffish about the structure of PAX as far as walking up to booths for demoing purposes go. There were a lot more games this year that caught my attention and yet had a line that was perceivably 2 hours plus of a wait. And I had a few side conversations with people thinking, like, I would rather just wait for Steam Next Fest on this game. I will write this down because it's caught my attention. But this year I was a lot more oriented towards going to panels and being with friends and just kind of like exploring the overall atmosphere of the place. And this year I felt like the panels were really niche in a way that I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. My experience of panels last year was a lot more broad. This year there were things as specific as like the transgender experience in Bloodborne, or like being a games journalist from the South, or other such things that I just found captivating. We all attended one that was video game cocktails, and mm-hmm. I thought that was memorable, if nothing else, for just the craft involved in the pairing video games with drinks, but also like hearing other people who are in the gaming space and the games that have resonated with them and impacted them, and like those stories too. So I feel like my PAX this year, the daily routine, back to that question, was so dramatically different than the first time that it is hard to say. I will say the early breakfast is important because you're there for a long time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. For me, like, this was my first one. So the first day was basically just like, you know, getting my feet under me, kind of getting to know the convention center and stuff like that. And it was basically like my primary reason for being there, other than the panel, which we'll talk about in a second, was to meet people. And I think calling out Steam Next Fest is a good call out. I think it's a reason that a lot of big players weren't there. And it's a reason that I was basically okay with like prioritizing seeing people over seeing games. And then during those empty spaces between plans or panels, that's when I hit the show floor and tried games out. And as the weekend went on and it got more and more crowded, I went to the show floor less and less because I did stand in a couple of hour plus long lines. And the things that I still wanted to see were those games that had those super long lines. So it was like, I decided to prioritize other things. Now, I definitely played like 10 to 15 games over the course of the weekend, but that was oddly almost secondary. And I think that like knowing that I'll get a chance to demo this game at another time did kind of play into that.
This is sort of a weird analogy, but I just thought of it while Dave was talking. I went to a Disney theme park for the first time in years this year, and it made me feel really uncomfortable standing in line for an indefinite amount of time for a very small window of a ride. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of what PAX felt like this year, in a way that last year, I don't know if it's because I booked more appointments more frequently or if the actual spread of where people were distributed throughout the event felt different because those heavy hitters weren't there. I normally wouldn't go to a Nintendo or a Sega or those Devolver booths unless there was something that really specifically was drawing me. And this year, I think that that's one sort of takeaway, is that I felt like I was at a theme park more than I was actually there to do journalism. And I felt the opposite the first year.
Yeah, that Saturday especially is just, it is impossible. I feel bad for anyone who buys a one day just to go through because the lines are long. You could spend, like, Dustborn, a game that I don't think we're going to talk about, but it's a game that I think at least one of us might have played.
I did.
If not, Katie, you did, yes. The lines were 2 hours plus for that game.
You know, I think I hit it on a lighter day, but it was still, I probably stood in there at least a half hour.
Yeah, so, you know, we're really lucky because most of us on the call, sorry, Dave, had media thanks to ReadPop, so we got to make appointments for some games, but then others, you know, it was impossible to see them. I mean, Enter the Chronosphere, Katie, which we'll talk about a little bit later, that one had easily a two-hour wait as well, so... Yeah, thank God for Steam Next Fest. And for the first time, I believe, or one of the first times, on Steam, you could actually play some of the demos that were on the show floor. There was a banner that sort of collected them all on Steam. So a friend of the show, Luke Lewis, who got COVID right before the show and could not go, still was able to play a lot of games that he would have been able to play on the show floor. So I guess going to a con may be less and less important as time goes on. Minus the friendship part. That's real important. Panels. On that note, I want to talk about the panel that Dave, you and I did, because Dave, it was your first panel, and we talked about the DS a whole lot and got people to say cool things into a microphone. So I want to know, what was your experience doing a panel for the first time, and how did you feel about that Nintendo DS panel as a whole?
So now that the panel is over, I can publicly admit that
he hates the DS.
No,
surprise,
I like the DS a lot, but as we were making the list of games, I was like, man, I played a lot of Game Boy Advance games on the DS, and then I played a ton of 3DS games, and other than Picross 3D, my one true love and joy, I didn't play a whole lot of DS games. So I decided to make Picross 3D my entire personality for the panel. I think that worked out pretty well, and yeah. It was cool. It was a really good experience. My first time doing a live show like that in a long time, like since I used to do theater a long time ago. But yeah, it was fun. And I mean, Jacob, you did a great job hosting. You got a compliment from my mom for being organized and hosting the panel really well. It's fantastic.
That's all I need.
Yeah. A lot of people tuned in on Twitch or watched the video on YouTube after the fact and told me that it was a good time. So I think we did a good job, and I had an absolute blast doing it.
Yeah, a couple notes about panels. If you want to watch that panel, it's in audio form in this feed. It's the episode right before this one. Mm-hmm. You might have seen it last week, but if you haven't, you can listen to it audio, or it's in video both on my YouTube channel or Paxi's YouTube channel. I'll make sure and link it that in the resources as well. And then we mentioned Brendan Groom, friend of the show's panel about cocktails. We'll also link that one too, because that one's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. The crowd was good, because... you know, I get more and more surprised. I don't know if it's people have been to one of these panels before, so they know what to expect, but there were people that came up with, like, iPhone notes because they have 15 seconds to pitch, like, the game they want on or the game they want off, and I would say every single person had a succinct pitch. Mm-hmm. One or two people went a little short or tried to go longer, but, like, all in all, it's a crowd that I was shocked by.
Yeah, I was really surprised. There was not a bad pitch in the bunch. Nope. There were some bad choices by people trying to kick certain games off the list, but there was no one that came up there like unprepared or really stumbled over what they were trying to say. Like, everyone knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm. And we were able to give away a copy of Sonic Roll, which was kind of fun and crazy. So
yeah.
Again, check that out on YouTube or in the audio feed if you want to hear us yell about Nintendo DS games. And the thing you didn't see for the audio listener, which is everyone, is I finally bought a copy of Picross 3D thanks to Dave. Mm-hmm. I bought it for a whole $15 Canadian, so I think that's probably the best $11 I've ever spent in my life.
Absolute bargain.
So now, the fun part, we're going to talk about video games and the games that we played on the show floor. We've got a dozen picks from the show floor that we loved collectively, and we've got some interviews that we'll sprinkle in throughout that, and then at the end, we'll sort of run you through a speed round of other games that we liked. So why don't we actually start with not me talking? Let's start with our guest, Dave.
Ooh.
Dave, tell us about Animal Well.
Oh, okay, so... I know Animal Well has been at previous conventions, right? It was at another PAX maybe in the past. This is my first time trying it out. And this was probably the game I was most excited to try when I looked at like the list of people that were going to be there. So I actually knew very little about what the game is actually like. I just knew it was like a side-scrolling platformer type. But getting my hands on it, and it's a really short demo. It was like 10 minutes. It was like torturously short. It was the only demo that I tried where, like, when I saw the countdown start to tick down and be like 10, 9, I was like, no, not yet. I got to keep playing this. So it was really, really interesting because in that 10 minutes, it really showcased what the game is, I feel like, which is super driven by exploration and figuring out how the world works around you. And there's like no combat in the game. There's just interactions that you can have with things in the world. And it reminded me of a game that I've recently made a small but significant part of my personality, which is Rain World, which is another game like that. Now, I didn't get the sense that Animal Well was going to be as difficult or punishing as Rain World is, but it has that same kind of like joy of exploration. The game doesn't teach you how things interact with each other. That's up to you to figure out. So like I was just kind of blown away by how many secrets and interactions and things I found in just that 10 minutes. So I was honestly floored by it.
You have firecrackers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the weapon. And I think I either read or heard an interview with the developer where they're like, yeah, we give you that really early on, but it's not like you're going to be finding new like weapons all the time.
And that one's out like imminently, right?
Yeah, coming out in May.
Crazy. Crazy. Katie, you played that one at the last PAX, didn't you?
No, I finally played it at this one. I saw it at the two previous PAXes I had been on. And for some reason, I was just like, oh, that game's coming. And it's been in the works for a while. And I don't know why. I just kind of like in my brain pushed it to the side. Like, I don't need to play it for some reason. And then this time I was like, you know what? I'm walking by. I see it. I have nothing, no goals in mind right now of what I want to play. I'm going to sit down and play Animal Well. Same thing. It's so short. And I was like, oh no. Oh no, I have a minute left. Oh, I want to keep playing this game, which is always a good sign. Yeah, you kind of find it very quickly. You're like, oh, there's a candle here. It's not lit. All right. And then a couple screens over, all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, here's a match. There's a candle back there. And you kind of have to piece it together by yourself. But it felt a lot better than I thought it would. I was really, really impressed with it, for a game that it wasn't really on my radar as something that I wanted to play. But no, Animal Well is great.
Yeah, kind of.
Video game donkey has a hit on his hand from the sound of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that was, like, really the only thing I knew about Animal Well before is that it has Donkey behind it. And so Donkey's, like, influence, I guess, can kind of push it up into the sphere where people know about it. But other than that, I didn't know anything about it. And I was, like, super pleasantly surprised. And by the looks of all your faces, I am now going to dedicate the rest of my life to getting you all to play Rain World.
Yeah, I think we all went, we know that the name of that game, but I've never seen it in motion.
Yeah. Shameless plug for Tales from the Backlog a couple months ago.
I'll include that one too in the resources. Let's go. Many episodes of Dave's show. That was Animal Well from Big Mode. We're going to include all the links to Steam for all of these games. So if this sounds cool, do us a favor. Please wishlist these games because it's very important. Flora Marigold, Kind Words 2.
Yeah, so Kind Words 2 is maybe I have the least to say about it, but it's the thing I'm most excited for from the show floor. I did write an article about this just to get that out of the way. So if people want to pick apart my thoughts in long form, that exists. But
also in the resource section.
Yeah. Oh, you poor guy. Please make sure to click these, listeners. As far as Kind Words 2 go, like, I was just delighted. I walked across it on accident on the show floor. If you haven't played Kind Words, the original game, it takes place in a bedroom and you write letters back and forth anonymously between players, and all you get to signify the other player is like their first initial. It's not even their Steam handle or something. And so you'll receive a prompt like, I really need some advice right now. I'm struggling at work to like be motivated and find purpose in what I'm doing. And then you'll write them something thoughtful and nice back and sort of like encouraging ideas. You send them back, you receive things back by way of encouragement. And that's the extent of what the game really is. There's some cool lo-fi music. There's some collectibles in the game for participating in various activities. And you can send and receive stickers back and forth between players. It's a cute, wholesome experience. But you really don't have a lot more to it than that. Kind Words 2, on the other hand, is more of like an Animal Crossing expansion to the game. And you run around between these various places in a city, and there are more specific prompts in the game this time where there are people that you can listen in on conversations for, people you can build relationships with. There are cafes and hilltops and all sorts of places where you can do more specific writing activities. And a lot of the demo on the show floor was unfinished, but it felt like such a clever extension of the original premise of the game that I was just captivated until, I mean, probably there were visibly two or three couples sitting behind me wanting to play it. And that's the only reason I stood up for the demo.
I played this one too, Flora. And like you said, it contains the entire first game, essentially, inside of the second game. Mm-hmm. But then there are other stores that you can go to change your fashion, at least in the demo that we saw.
Yeah.
Or, for example, even go into a record shop where the questions that the prompts that you get are more geared towards like media. So there's like, hey, people will ask, what's a game like Doki Doki Literature Club that I can play? Or I like this band. Can you suggest others that are like that? And one, I can't imagine the data set that this developer has and what they could do with it if they wanted to. But it sounds like they've thought about that. And then like moderation for this, because it sounds like the team is relatively small. And of course, they have automations to their moderation. But some of the moderation is being done by them, which just seems wild when you think about how that first game took off in the pandemic.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that's additionally remarkable for me is that a lot of the moderating work, which does seem rather thankless and really hidden from the scenes, informed the way this game was expanded. It was because they noticed these trends in the player interactions and feedback that, like, no one was explicitly asking for a record shop, but a lot of people were functionally doing the thing of recommending music. And so it's cool that someone who apparently still has an organic passion for this game was able to find ways to extend and repurpose the premise of the original. And a final note, if you have the original Kind Words and you're like, ooh, there's another one? Cool, great. It's cross-compatible with the sequel, which is something I don't think I've ever seen happen, where the original game and the sequel can talk to each other. You can still write letters back and forth.
Cool.
So, like, you're not locked out because the sequel exists. The original player base is not, quote-unquote, left behind. There's just more to do in the second one.
Yeah, because that game is $5, the original. So,
yeah.
Kind Words 2, Lo-Fi City Pop, from Pop Cannibal, coming TBD. That was Flora's first pick. Katie, your first pick is a game that you sort of were viral on Instagram because of.
Oh, God.
This is Enter the Chronosphere.
I felt so bad. They asked me to, like, talk about your experience playing the game on camera for our socials. And I was like, you know what? Sure, because this game was great, and all you people are lovely, so I'm going to do it. And, you know, stimulation on the show floor, and my brain was amok, and I was like, it's great. He's like, how does it look? I'm like, it looks great. How does it play? It plays great. I don't think I said anything productive. So I'm going to
link that in the resources too. Katie, go ahead.
No, please don't. I'm going to rep it way better now. So Enter the Chronosphere is a top-down roguelite action game where you are doing runs up this tower. And so I say turn-based, but it is not turn-based in a way where you take a turn, the enemy takes a turn. You are taking your turn simultaneously. So it's actually like a pretty quick pace if you want it to be. But you can also go like, oh no, I'm in a jam. Sit back and kind of assess, because it gets kind of, it can be kind of bullet helly at times when if multiple enemies are shooting at you and all these bullets are like sitting there coming towards you and you go, oh, what do I do now? You can think about it and kind of turn it almost into like a little bit of a puzzle game. But it's a lot of fun. So you have... There are different characters you can play, different weapons you can pick up through your run, so you can change them out as you go, abilities you can pick up, you just kind of make your way up, and it's kind of reminiscent of like a turn-based version of Super Hot, but top-down. I had so much fun. I thought I was going to get into trouble like a few levels up, and then I got this one ability where every time I killed an enemy, I got 1 point of health back, which isn't a lot, but if you, you know, if you take your time and you're conservative, you do really well. I made it all the way to the top, all the way to the final boss, died at the final boss, and then the person, Humberto, who was manning the booth, was like, oh my god, you made it to the boss, and I got a free shirt. I was pretty happy about it. But yeah, no, Enter the Chronosphere, so much fun. Thankfully, I played it, I think on Thursday, like the first day, when it was less busy, and it only got busier as it went. I felt bad. I recommended it to so many people, and they're like, I'm standing in line. It's been an hour. I'm like, oh, it's really good, though, I promise. But yeah, it is not coming out until 2025.
Or 26 even is what I was told. Yeah,
it felt done, which is crazy. Like, they could release this game in early access, but it didn't sound like they intend to. It sounds like they really want to build out multiple chronospheres, so like different biomes, different kinds of towers, different enemies, different characters. So like, they really want to build this game up. But what I played felt finished. Like, it felt fantastic.
Even the art style was dope. Like, it had a psychedelic space vibe to it.
Yeah,
it's
colors
like, what
are
if,
awesome.
What if Ziggy Stardust, but game?
I was going to say Yellow Submarine, but yeah. Like, yeah, Acid Trip Beatles, but in a game.
Yeah, absolutely sick. Enter the Chronosphere from Effort Star, coming TBD, Flora.
How long was your demo experience, Katie? Just for
oh,
the
my goodness. So, I'm getting ready to leave. And then a woman is like asking people manning the booth, like, oh, how long till I would get to play this if I'm waiting? They have like quite a few setups. And so Humberto is like, hey, you know, it depends. Some people play it for 10 minutes. Some people play it for 20 minutes. She played, I'm gathering my things to leave. He points at me. She just played for 55 minutes. And my mind was blown. I was like, no, you're lying to me. Like, I played for 30 minutes tops. And he's like, no, no. I clocked you. Like, I was watching the whole time. You played for 55 minutes. And that, to me, says everything I need to know. I thought it was a half hour. And I killed an hour worth of time playing that one game. And I was thrilled. So, yeah, highly recommend.
Yeah, Dave and I, on day one, for me at least, waited in that line for, what, 45 minutes?
It was a while, yeah.
Unfortunately, Dave had to leave right at the very end of the line, like when we were about to sit down. But after all that time, and we did this primarily from your word of mouth, Katie, it took me, I'm going to guess, 10 minutes before I was wiped out and done. My brain completely failed to click with this game. I thought it was fun, engaging, well-designed, all of the praise that we're adding to it. But for some reason, the right-click, left-click mechanic for me was...
Yeah.
Way uncomfortable, and I think it was partially the self-consciousness of sitting on the show floor aware of a ticking line behind me, but also just that's a game that I would sort of like to be able to like try over and over again on a level until I felt comfortable before advancing up the tower. And in the demo setting, either I think you click with it or you don't. I think it's really interesting that someone like yourself found it like incredibly immersive, and you made it all the way through intuitively, and partially it sounds like attributed to an ability that you found that I did not get. But still, in the, let's say, 4 or 5 stages I actually worked through, I thought it was really, really well designed.
Enter the Chronosphere is Katie's first pick. I'm going to jump in here and talk about Lucid, which is the world's first Celestoidvania from the Matt Black studio. This one's published by Apogee. Again, shout out to Apogee for as an Apogee creator, got access to this one behind closed doors. I'm a fancy boy. Why don't we just actually start with an interview from Eric Manahan, where he talks about some of his inspirations behind Lucid.
Hi, my name is Eric Manahan. I'm the developer behind Lucid. It is the world's first Celestoidvania.
What does that mean?
It's exactly what you think it means. If you've played Celeste, there's this one mechanic that I just took and ran with. But if you dash into a gem in the air, it refreshes your jump resources and you can maintain your airborne aerial acrobatics. And I took that idea and I just ran with it. And then packaged it in a colorful cast of characters, world and story, Metroidvania kind of game.
So when I was playing with Hayden, he had said that there's other influences in there. Do you want to talk about about the other influences besides Celeste and Metroidvania?
I would absolutely.
Smash Brothers, tell me about it.
It is. I don't know. I can't tell if you're being facetious, but
absolutely. I absolutely am not.
Okay, cool, because the dash is like a dodge roll.
Yep.
There's short hopping. Mm-hmm. A lot of the abilities are influenced by some of the characters in Smash's special moves. I mean, anyone that's played it will be like, this is kind of like that. It's because I love that game, and it's exactly like that. So other games would be Mega Man X, huge Mega Man X fan, Super Metroid, obviously, Legend of Zelda's, take your pick, they're almost all fantastic. Celeste,
Wand of Gamelon, you're a big fan, right?
Celeste, obviously, and then the weird one would be like Hades / Doom 2016, and that's where the arena combat scenarios start coming in, and you only got to play with two of the crystal arts, but eventually you get five, and you will be needed to swap through them as you're fighting. Certain enemies will take the slash, then you gotta hit them with this, and then you gotta swap to the other one, and it's all at your disposal. So,
is the sword like a Mega Man Zero thing?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That
three-hit combo is directly inspired by the Zero Saber.
Can you talk about what, as far as the world goes, what players should expect in the full game someday?
Sure. Size, I'm aiming for like a, I guess like a Hollow Knight-sized world map and a healthy adventure. So nothing that's a nice chunked adventure. Not too short, not too long. Satisfying.
I was playing with both the D-pad and the stick.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the effort you put into the joystick? Because it's not often you get controls as tight as that on a joystick.
I really appreciate that because I am admittedly a D-pad guy for the reason you just said. But I spent a long time with Mason. Shout out to Mason. He's a fantastic coder. He helped me out tremendously. But we worked to make sure the D-pad and the stick were indistinguishable. So it took some time, but we figured it out.
Favorite fighter in Smash?
Captain Falcon.
In all versions, or?
No. Captain Falcon, Ganondorf, Donkey Kong. And then, of course, Fox. I'm sorry.
If you had to tell people why they should play your game when it comes out, how would you say, like, you need to play this game?
Okay, also Mewtwo. if you need to play, you should really play my game because I put everything I am, like, it's me. It's everything I've loved growing up as a kid. The games, the movies, the shows. Every influence is like in there some way. So aside from just the absurd amount of love I put into it, pixel art, story, characters, and then super responsive and an extension of you, almost like if you're playing an instrument, that's what it's going to feel like. So,
are you a kaiju fan?
Yeah. Bro, Godzilla is my man. Mm-hmm. My fiance is actually in VFX, and she's worked on Godzilla. No. It's pretty fucking rad. So, I'm a fan, yes.
When is the game coming out, and on what platforms, if you know?
It's slated for late 2025. That's what I'm aiming for, but everyone knows how schedules go. But that is what I'm shooting for, and it's coming to PC first, but it's planned to hit all major platforms. I don't know the order, but I'm a Nintendo fanboy, admittedly, and I would love to get to the Switch or whatever is switching at that time. But, yeah.
Eric, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
And that was our chat with Eric Manahan from the Matt Black Studio, talking through some of the inspirations for Lucid. Y'all, this game just felt incredible. I know we've got at least one Celeste superfan on this call, but this game felt like Celeste in the way that it moves. You have a dash move and a slash, and so there are these crystals that allow you to do the thing you can do in Celeste where it, you know, extends your jump. And I've not played a game that has felt as good as Celeste until I touched Lucid, and it's one that we got a vertical slice where we got to check out some of the combat moves, and there's sort of a dash that's inspired by Super Smash Brothers, and, you know, got to, you know, play around with it a little bit more. It was perfect when I played it, and I couldn't believe that it was a game that's coming out in 2025. I was like, oh, so I can play this, like, next week, and that's when it's done, Eric? I can just play it then? And no, this one's, you know, still got some time, but it sounds like it's really just, like, content that is still to come.
I played this on the show floor as well, and I had this really unfortunate experience of hopping on the tail end of someone else's demo time with a brand new screen where it said, like, start demo, whatever, and I got to play for 3 minutes, and then it ran out, and I was so confused. I was like, what? And then my friend, who was right behind me, played for what felt like 20, and I watched this game go from this sort of clunky version that I played, and I was kind of like, why is there so much word of mouth on this, to watching what you're describing, Jacob, which is one of the most fluid platformers I've seen in a really long time. And the way that the demo specifically taught you the mechanics, just vicariously watching as the player, I felt like I was learning a lot about this game. And there's some really cool climbing mechanics involving, like, sort of aerial platforming that I think is going to feel different than a Celeste, but immediately it goes into these sort of late game Celeste mechanics that I was really impressed to see, like, introduced in that short little window of time.
And even the thing that we might have touched on it in the interview, but playing it with a D-pad felt great, as a lot of these games do, but it felt really good with a stick, which is not something that I will typically say about a lot of Metroidvanias, where a lot of them you need the precision from a D-pad, but I was pleasantly shocked by how good it felt on the left stick to play.
Yeah, I agree. It felt fantastic. It is, yeah, Celeste, but it is a platform Metroidvania. Amazing. With a Mega Man gun. Like, you could shoot things. Great. Anyway, but jokes aside, it felt so good. I couldn't believe it. Like, I asked Eric, I was like, so, like, what have you made before this? Because I'm not familiar. And he looks at me sheepishly and is like, it's my first game. And I called him a liar. I was like, you're joking. This cannot possibly be your first game. He's like, it's my first game I've ever made. I'm like, congratulations, because it feels so good. Like, it's another one that I'm like, I would play this today. If it came out today, I'd play it right now. It's really, really good.
This game is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
Prepare yourself.
Yeah, Eric, prepare yourself.
Eric, prepare yourself. That's Lucid from Matt Black Studio and Apogee. Dave, your second game is one from Midwest Games and being developed by Magic Games. Tell us about Duck Paradox.
Yeah, Duck Paradox. I stumbled across this on the show floor because I saw Midwest on a big banner, and I was like, I'm from the Midwest. You know, see what they're up to.
You had an Ohio sweatshirt on, didn't you?
Yeah, I was broadcasting. Yeah, so I went over and they were like, hey, I just introduced myself and was like, hey, well, you know, what do you have? And they were like, well, check out Duck Paradox. And so Duck Paradox is a very arcadey roguelike. It's basically just making your way through these stages, seeing how far you can get. And what you do is you have to navigate through this, like, platforming, maybe a little light puzzling, maybe a little bit of combat, and find this lost duck, collect it, then bring it back to this, like, exit point in the level. And then as this, you know, portal or whatever is stabilizing over a period of time, then these evil duck enemies will come attack and you have to fight them off. And it'll give you a thing and say, like, it'll say, like, kill three enemies and then the portal will stabilize. And it's a twin stick shooter, side scrolling. And the thing about it is, if you miss, your bullets will ricochet around the environment. They'll only stop if you hit an enemy. So you have to be really careful, or else you will create a bullet hell situation for yourself, which I thought was a nice challenge. So the first time I played it, I died on, like, the second level. The second time I made it to, like, the third level. And it really, like, I'm not a real big, you know, score chaser or big fan of, like, arcadey games like this all the time, but this one felt really good to play, and it tapped into that, like, I know I can do better. I have to try one more time. I know I can beat my last time. So I had a really good time with it. It was, like I said, easy to control, easy to figure out, like, what you can do. You can pick up some, like, abilities if you make it between levels. You get new abilities like a roguelike will give you. And it was just a good time, tapped into that one more try type of mentality that the best roguelikes give you.
Yeah, I dabbled with it for a good, like, 10 minutes, but that's a long time for this game because it is fast paced. Mm-hmm. You die, you kick right back into it. It does that thing where it presents you with a task that seems very simple, And then you go, oh, okay. And you start moving around. And then once your first bullet starts ricocheting, you go, oh, okay. We're adding some things. And it kind of got more complex as you go. And like you said, it's like an action puzzle almost. Yeah, it was fun. There was a younger guy behind me who had come back and they were like, oh, you're back. He made it to like level, I don't know what. He had the record for like the highest, furthest that anyone had gone. And they're like, you came back to try and get to level, whatever, level 20, didn't you? He's like, yeah, I did. Like he had played it the day before and he's like, no, I'm coming back. He was already at the top of the leaderboard because they had a little scoreboard like posted. And he's like, no, I need to come back. Because yeah, it gives you that itch of like, no, I can do it. Like, I know I can do it, but it's challenging.
Yeah. And I talked to the developers were not there, but I talked with the people on the publishing side and they were talking about, you know, maybe adding in a more linear type of structure to it, as opposed to like this arcade, like basically see what level you can get to game mode. Mm. So something to keep an eye on. And I think it's in early access, if I remember right.
That's absolutely what I was going to say, is this one is in early access. There's a demo on Steam available. It is wildly Midwest Games' first game because they're a relatively new publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Their head, Ben Coelho, who used to be the head of games at Netflix, is now the founder and CEO of Midwest. This is their first game. They're publishing a few more, including Ra Ra Boom, which I think some of us played on the floor. So excited to see more games being published in the Midwest. And this one, again, is Duck Paradox. Our next one is from Flora. Tell us about Athenian Rhapsody.
So Athenian Rhapsody is very much, I think, surface level, just Undertale clone. And I don't mean that to be overly reductive. I think that that's just an easy way to immediately understand what this game is. From the graphics of this game, which feel like Game Maker, and the sort of mixture of generic pixel art with extremely charismatic hand-drawn sprites, the tone of the writing being self-aware, goofy, fourth wall breaking, making jokes about the fact that I'm playing this demo on the PAX floor, making fun of the game industry, to the fact that it's doing traditional turn-based RPG, but you can actually quote-unquote act and like peaceably talk your way through relationship building conversations while you dodge bullet hell boxed in scenarios. It's Undertale. Like, I don't think that you need to say more than that, really. And the game, I walked by it a few times on the show floor, not expecting to sit down and play it. There were a lot of these sort of party hats going around the event that you would see that had these like purple polka dots that looked like pieces of pizza, basically. And I'm not a big party hat fan, but it caught my attention and I finally ended up in a conversation with someone wearing them and they gushed briefly about this demo and I happened to walk by it when there was no one standing in front of the controller. So I went on board to play this demo and midway through the demo, it said you reach out in front of you to put on the cowboy hat in real life that's on the table. And I looked down and there was a cowboy hat on the table and it had a thing of hairnets sitting next to the cowboy hat. And so I'm not one to back down from the bit. I put on the cowboy hat and I kept playing the demo. And it was just that sort of self-aware sort of presentation that drew me in and kept me there. One of the tasks I had to do in this demo was make burgers for a character to like de-aggro them. And I had my choice of tracking down what sort of patty I was going to put in the middle of this burger. I ended up with urinal cakes.
Great. Amazing.
So
great patty.
That's the game you're in for, at least so far with the demo. I think this game was just successfully kickstarted for a low sum, and so I think it's going to probably be one of those solo developer takes a while sort of projects, but it made me laugh. It made memories for me. It had gimmicks at the booth. Like, I love a good PAX booth where you do something in addition to sit there with the controller in the game. And so definitely one of the more memorable experiences for me this year.
Is there a mechanic also with this one, and you may not have seen this in the demo, where you can stack your playthroughs or like combine different playthroughs together?
I wouldn't have seen that in the demo. It was just one quick attempt at a file. But if something like that exists, I don't really know what that would entail, but sounds cool.
What do those words mean, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say that sounds cool. What does it mean though?
Yeah, it's on the Steam page. You know, we'll maybe one of us will try the demo and have thoughts about it somewhere online after this. But the demo is on Steam. This one is from, you said, Soldier developer Nico Papalia.
That sounds right. Yeah,
is the developer?
Yeah, they were hanging out right behind the booth. It was pretty cool.
And
really,
yeah,
friendly.
The demo's
person.
Available. Demos online. And any other thoughts about Athenian Rhapsody, Flora? Like, cut you off a bunch of times.
No, just no. The acknowledgement of the FaceTime thumbs up that just popped up.
Okay. Katie, tell us about Deathbound.
Ooh, Deathbound. Deathbound is a... So they market it as the first ever party-based Souls-like. So let's say you're playing another Souls game. You're playing Dark Souls. You have to commit to a build. Right? You're like, oh, either a strength build or a dexterity build or a magic build. Not so in Deathbound. Deathbound, you hit a button on the D-pad and you switch to a different character. You can switch to your magic character. You can switch to your dexterity, like your assassin type. You can switch to a ranger or a hulking like barbarian at a moment's notice, which at first is almost overwhelming because... Dark Souls, Souls-likes, I like to get into a rhythm with one character, but it almost like builds its own rhythm where it's kind of fast, you're switching around. As long as the character that you're playing has health, you're okay. So like you're running out of health, you swap to one of your other characters at a moment's notice, and whoever has the most health or whichever character you want to roll with for a little bit. It's interesting. They described it, the environment, as low sci-fi feudalism, which wrap your head around that one. So because I'm like, oh, I have swords and I have hammers and I have crossbows, but I just walked by like a broken down minivan next to me. And now I'm hitting buttons on a console and opening up a door. And I was like, where am I? Afterwards, speaking with person manning the booth, they were like, oh, did you see the football helmet? I'm like, no, I didn't see the football helmet. What are you talking about? It has, within the world, there is the Cult of Life, I think. Like, there are factions. Each one of your characters kind of subscribes to one of the factions. There is a setup where within the dial, because you will customize which characters, because there's a bunch of them, but you can roll with four at a time. So within the like kind of D-pad construct, up, down, left, right, and down, how you set them up, if they get along, like if they are on the same side of, I think it's the Cult of Life and the Something of Death, they will either mesh or not. But if they don't mesh, it almost gives you like a berserker buff instead of like a normal, you know, like a berserker buff. You're like, oh, I have a buff, but it debuffs me in another way. So you can have characters that don't get along for a specific buff you want. Like, it's very, very customizable in a way that I don't find Souls-likes are usually, they're not usually customizable on the go. It's like you customize over the course of your playthrough, not moment to moment. It was like a really, really different spin on it, on the genre.
Yeah, what sounds interesting to me is what you just said, like a new interesting spin on the genre. Because like people who know me know that I'm a huge From Software and Souls guy, but I kind of get tired of the Souls likes because a lot of them aren't introducing like new creative spins on that established formula. They're just like, mm-hmm. We're going to make Dark Souls, but sci-fi, or we're going to make Dark Souls, but, you know, something else, or Dark Souls, but Pinocchio. Although I heard that one's really good. I just haven't played it. Okay, cool. So strike that from the record, Jacob. What's cool is whenever somebody comes to the genre where people are like, maybe getting tired of the same attempts at the same formula and bringing something new. Because if you're not bringing something new, you're inviting comparisons to From Software directly, which mm-hmm. is not something that's going to make a lot of people look good. So this is exciting to me.
Yeah, and I have a hard time in Dark Souls switching play styles. Like, I kind of stick with the same thing. This allows you to experiment without any risk, really, because you can try a different build, and it's not like you don't have to put hours into building up a new build. Like, no, I don't have to do a new playthrough. I can just try out the magic character for a little bit and try and play with them more so than I usually do. It lets you experiment in a way that Souls-likes usually don't.
Again, the cool part of this one is the demo that you may have played on the floor, it looks like it's available on Steam.
It is.
So if these words from Dave and Katie got you excited about Deathbound, you can try that out on Steam. Again, link in the show notes. This one comes to us from Trial Forge Studio and being published by Tate Multimedia. 2024, they give you an indication of when this one's coming?
Aiming for 2024. Late 2024.
Cool. Very good. My second game is going to be Let's Revolution. This one is from Buck and from Ant Food. Buck did the animation and gameplay. Ant Food did the music. I'm just going to kick it off with an interview that we have two interviews for. One with Michael Hyland, who's a creative director for games at Buck. And then you'll hear a second voice, and that voice is from Spencer Casey, who did the music, who works at Ant Food. So we're going to start now with an interview from Michael.
So play the demo, it's sick, inspired by Minesweeper. How the heck did you come to a game like this?
Yeah, so the original Minesweeper mutation was a shower thought that I had of like, you know, we were prototyping games and I just had this thought of like, what if you put the Minesweeper numbers on something other than mines? I've always been really into mazes and like procedural generation. So the first thing I tried was putting the numbers around a procedurally generated maze, and it was from the start kind of interesting space because the maze added a second layer of logic where you know there has to be a maze on certain tiles, has to connect in certain ways. That felt really tasty, and then as we continued prototyping it, we added sort of this turn-based tactics sort of combat layer to it, and then like it all started clicking when you had a character moving around a map, revealing tiles. It started to feel really interesting and a mix of like familiar and kind of unique gameplay.
Buck's first game.
Yep.
Y'all don't typically make games. Can you talk about some of the projects that we might know you from?
Sure.
And then also how you decided to make games?
Yeah, so Buck has been around for about 20 years. They're one of the biggest like creative services companies. We do commercial animation design. We made a lot of Instagram's first face filters when Instagram was first putting out face filters. We worked on Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. We did like the opening sequence where Gwen is drumming. That was all done at Buck. We've done an episode of Love, Death, and Robots, Night of the Mini Dead. We've like definitely done stuff that people interact with almost every day, but we can't take credit for because it's done kind of like white label for big tech companies. But yeah, we're like one of the top animation studios. That's what drew me in as a game developer. They basically approached me saying they wanted to make games. They had tried to make games. They were struggling to figure out what makes a game fun. They have all this amazing art directors, animators. So it's been a dream job for me to get to come in. I built a small indie team. We have four developers, and then for each project, we pull in the best artists and animators for that project to help realize the visuals and the world building and the animation. And it's great. They're the best.
It's a rogue game.
Yeah.
It's out on PC now. Consoles on April 11th. If someone is enticed by the words Minesweeper rogue game, what should they expect in this one compared to other rogue games?
Yeah, so this, like, because a lot of the people at Buck working on the games are not hardcore players, like, one of our big goals was to make a roguelike, a roguelite, technically, that was a little bit more inviting and pleasant to play, smaller runs. So, like, a run in this game is 20 to 40 minutes. You don't have to put 3 hours in and then, like, fail on the last level and hate yourself forever. Yeah, it's more of a lunch break game. It's a little bit lighter, but it has a lot of depth for players who want a big challenge. Like, it has that, but for most players, maybe more casual players who wouldn't normally try a roguelike because they're notoriously punishing, this is, like, something you can play on a second screen while watching your shows. You can, like, play it on a lunch break. It just is a really nice, light, kind of lo-fi, chill kind of experience.
You mentioned, too, that there are speedrunners of this game now?
Yeah, so weirdly, like, this game was designed to be, like, a chill, turn-based, take-your-time game, but, of course, there are people speedrunning it. I just saw, like, an amazing streamer just put up, what is her tag? I'll tell you after, maybe you can link to it. They put up, like, a 40-minute amazing, like, documentary about their process of like wanting to break a world record speedrun and choosing Let's Revolution, and like over the course of 26 hours of playing, they finally do it. It's amazing. So that's cool for me as a developer, because I can't play that fast. So it's cool to see people do stuff with the game that we didn't design for, but people are, you know, making it their own.
A lot of pinks, a lot of purples, a lot of blues.
Yeah.
You had a very talented art team work on the game. Can you talk about some of the inspirations behind the art of this one?
Sure.
Because it's beautiful.
Yeah. So I can't take credit for the visual direction. That was all our art director, Emily Suvanvej. Again, I can give you a link for her Instagram. She's amazing. She would say the influences are like Studio Ghibli, Steven Universe, Mobius, the French artist. It was basically like we went to the artist and we were like, what are your favorite influences? And they told us those, and that's kind of the direction we took. A lot of the art came from the design of the King, was one of the first characters we designed, and the King is like a mix of Yubaba from Spirited Away and like the King of the Universe from Katamari Damacy, a couple other things mixed in.
But also like Cartoon Network a little bit too.
Yeah. And yeah, definitely some Steven Universe in there, and like once we figured that character out, like everything else kind of like came out of that character design, which is really cool.
It's out now on PC. Can you let folks know where they can find it on consoles come April 11th?
Yeah, so it's been out on Steam since July of last year. We've got 95% approval on Steam. It works great on Steam Deck. It's Steam Deck verified. It works on Mac, which is kind of cool if you're a Mac user. It's coming to consoles, Switch, Xbox One, Xbox Series S and X, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5, all on April 11th. You can pre-order on some of those platforms. You can wishlist on the other ones. And yeah, it'll be everywhere.
That's it. That's great. Thank you for your time.
Cool. Yeah, thank you.
Hey, me again. Here's Spencer Casey, who did the music on the game. He's from Ant Food.
You mentioned, you know, this game's a Minesweeper game. Minesweeper games are very popular. Windows 95, Windows 98. Did you pull inspirations from sort of that era sonically for this one?
We did. I wouldn't say we pulled from any specific game, but that era is very nostalgic to me. In audio, it has a very particular sound, like Sound Blaster, like cards for like audio cards for the PC, just different equipment that was used to create the soundtracks for games back then. And so we're real gearheads at Ant Food. We're real nerds with that stuff. So we have a large collection of synths from various different times. And for this, we wanted to have, you know, give a little wink and nod towards that era, but also bring it, you know, into modern days and have it feel fresh still while still feeling nostalgic. And so we used certain synths of the time, such as the Korg Wave Station, Roland D50, Kurzweil K2000, to really get those digital textures that have a certain sheen about them, but also have a little bit of grittiness because they're sort of low quality, sample-based digital synths. And we combine those with real instruments, such as drums, trumpet, human voice, piano, percussion, as well as more modern synthesizers. We use a lot of, this is nerdy, but some modular stuff that's doing physical modeling. We really threw the whole kitchen sink into this to try to create something special.
Did you have any other inspirations for the game outside of the Sound Blaster era of sound cards?
I wouldn't say nothing is tied to any game. I personally, and I didn't write all the music, we had a team of four or five composers working on this, and we collaborated on most of the tracks, but some of them were written by individuals. But I'm personally super influenced by the Super Nintendo era, the Squaresoft stuff, like you know, Final Fantasy VI, Chrono Trigger. Those are huge for me, and so definitely some of that squeaks in from me writing. But you know, some of our I shouldn't be saying this, but some of our composers like don't really play games at all, so they were coming from a different perspective, which I think was great. And yeah, like a lot of the tracks, like for instance, we're seeing the Phlox region right here. I wrote the initial composition to that, but once I sort of had that outline, all the other composers came in and added their own instrumentation layers and whatnot, and it really became like a cool, super collaborative, magical experience.
Last question. Sounds like maybe you're the resident game nerd on staff. What is your favorite game soundtrack of all time?
I mentioned it already. I think Chrono Trigger might be my favorite. It's so good. I could listen to it all the time.
Overworld sound or overworld music? Is that or is it the battle theme that you're like, that's my issue?
Frog's theme is really good. Just everything. Everything is so good.
Less Revolution is out now on Steam. Consoles April 11th. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And we're back. Like I mentioned, Let's Revolution, Minesweeper roguelite with a sort of Candyland aesthetic that looked very complicated in the PAX Rising booth, just looking at it. I'd seen video of this one before, and I'm like, this looks incredibly complicated. But truly, if you understand Minesweeper, hey, there's a number in the top of a square on a grid of squares, which will indicate, you know, instead of how many bombs are around you, how many enemies and paths are around you, or not how many enemies, how many paths are around which will have enemies on them. And truly, depending on the character you have, your job is to either kill all the enemies and then make it to the end of the board to chase the king to the 10th board and then beat him. Or if you have a character that's focused on stealth, your job then is to hit every square that is not a path, and just you're incredibly weak, so don't get into combat. There's 6 characters in the full game, and each one offers a little bit of variety in there, but it's one that I think has finally helped me loosen my grip of my really bad Balatro addiction. And it's already out on PC, so if this is something that you're super interested in, it's out on PC, and it is coming up for consoles very soon, on April 11th. Dave, your third game is one that you waited in line for just a little bit for. This one's Fallen Aces.
Yeah, this is a New Blood Interactive published game, and New Blood is kind of on the forefront, or, you know, kind of started this, or was, you know, I don't want to give them all the credit, but they were certainly like in the charge, bringing back the retro aesthetic boomer shooter type games. Think of Dusk, and collaborations with David Szymanski, who did Iron Lung and stuff like that.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, so they have a definite vibe about the games that they publish, similar to like a Devolver. You know, Devolver has a type that they go after, mm-hmm. and New Blood does too. So this is a first-person immersive sim. It's a shooter, like it plays like a shooter, but what I experienced was mostly melee combat. And the first thing you see about it is the aesthetic. It has like this old-school gangster aesthetic. Characters are cardboard cutouts, comic book style. And when I say cardboard cutouts, I mean if you get on the side of an enemy, they're perfectly flat, like a piece of cardboard. Huh. They have these over-exaggerated facial expressions. The voice acting is committing to this gangster bit, pinstripe suits and all of that, you know. So really striking aesthetic. And then cool, immersive game design. Just a couple examples, like none of the weapons that I picked up were permanent. I would pick up a baseball bat and bash a few guys, and then it would break. And then I could throw the baseball bat, pick up a trash can, bash a few guys. It would break, but now I have a trash can lid that I can use as a shield, or I can bash people with that. And so it's this continuous, like, you know, Breath of the Wild type. Your stuff is breaking. You're picking up something else. You're improvising with the things around you. And the other thing about it is the demo took place in this one city block, and you have a map, but the map doesn't mark where you are, but it shows you the landmarks around. And then when you look out in the world, all the landmarks are really obvious where they are. So they'll give you directions, and they'll say, like, go to, you know, Tony's apartment. It's past the comic book store behind the donut shop. And you look at your map, find where those things are, orient yourself. And then there's the immersive sim element of like, oh, there's a fire, so I can't walk there. I have to figure out a different path around. So I really liked what this game was doing. Only issue was I got lost, again, because of the map thing. And it would be a thing that I would like really joyously sink my teeth into if I'm playing by myself at home. But there is a pressure because there is a long line, and this is a pretty long demo. So I like got really self-conscious, like, Dave, you can't get lost right now. Dude, there's people waiting. Like, I waited in line for like an hour to play this game, and the line's even longer now. So get your shit together, find where you're supposed to go. And eventually I did. But that was the one standout for me of like how the PAX floor is cool to sample games, but it's not necessarily the ideal environment to play an immersive sim. But the game really did leave an impression. So I was already interested because of the New Blood like pedigree, but playing it definitely like reinforced this is something really cool. I love immersive sims. It's one of my favorite genres. So I'm definitely excited for this.
PAX demo pressure is a very real thing, especially with puzzle games. Especially when the people waiting are standing behind you and can see what you're doing. And you're like, these people are watching me dabble with this one puzzle and try and figure it out for too long. And you start to feel self-conscious and you're like, I'm so sorry. Right now I'm a dummy and this puzzle is kicking my butt. But anyway, but yeah, no, for sure. There are certain games that it's like, oh, I can't wait to play this for real almost.
Did anyone here play 13, the old like Xbox, PS2, GameCube era comic book looking game, Dave?
Nope.
No? Okay. If anyone has played that, it is almost like the visuals here are the fully realized version of that, where it's colorful, it's comic book, a lot of flat textures. You know, you'll open a fridge and the fridge will be flat, but it looks sick and smooth as butter, which I'm assuming is how it played, Dave.
Oh yeah, absolutely no issues whatsoever. That aesthetic was really good, like the comic booky, like think of in a comic book like when Batman punches someone in the face and like the exaggerated face they make. That's the face everyone in the game makes when you punch them in the face or throw a broken bottle at them or something like that. So the commitment to the aesthetic is really awesome. And then yeah, the gameplay was a ton of fun too. So it's definitely one that like when I saw the New Blood banner at PAX, so I was like, I don't know what they have, but I'm going to go check it out. And it was a really pleasant experience there.
From Trey Powell and Jason Bond, that was Fallen Aces, published by New Blood Interactive. There's a demo for this one on Steam. Again, link in the show notes. Flora, your last game is a queer-ass Resident Evil game. Tell us about Sorry We're Closed.
So, full disclosure, I threw this on the list at the very last second, like 15 minutes before we started the recording tonight. I had a different game as my third, and then I realized when I went to look up just the name of the characters in the demo that the game has been out for a while, and I just didn't know about it. So, one of those weird...
What game is it? Just shout it out.
It was River Tales, Stronger Together. It was like a cute little co-op, like sort of mascot platformy sort of game. Sorry We're Closed, as you suggested, is very much a like visually queer Resident Evil Silent Hill sort of inspired game, very much evoking that like N64 graphic nostalgia sort of atmosphere, fixed camera angles, all the buzzwords. And this game I played on my last day of the show floor, and it was sort of on the way out, and I wasn't going to swing by it ahead of time. But something about it drew me in, and I had my friend Barry from Epilogue with me, and we both sat down at separate computers and played it. And survival horror is not my thing, but I thought the combat was really interesting. I thought the character designs were very like Paradise Killer-esque, and in a way that worked for me. Neon and flamboyant and just very visually striking and distinct. The tone and everything worked really well for me. I found myself a little bit stuck with the puzzling. There was a lot of environmental shepherding of things back and forth between corridors, and the enemies would respawn, at least in the demo, and so you would have to sit there and tediously like go back and forth and manage with limited ammo in your inventory how to get back through and try out this new like screwdriver on a picked lock. But there was an interesting ability that I enjoyed and I would like to see manifest in a proper game, and it was this ability that involved your character's third eye. And so you were toggling between twin perceptions throughout the demo, and it changed a lot in the environment, and I always love when games do something like that where you traverse the same exact environment but from two perspectives or with different abilities. And that second dimension kept me hooked in a way that I think from the aesthetic alone, I could have enjoyed this game, but then once I had to sort of do the dual awareness thing. I wanted to play more of it, which again is usually a good sign of a PAX demo.
Yeah, that third eye mechanic influences your puzzle solving and traversal around the environments and stuff, but it also has combat implications, and the combat side of it, you know, where it highlights a weak point where you shoot, and that's good because it seemed really committed to the old school survival horror, like resource management thing. I ran out of bullets during my demo. So that reminded me of Killer 7 a lot. And I loved that aspect of Killer 7. Like, I found that consistently fun in that game. So I played this too. I thought it was a good time. Really committed to that survival horror inspiration, recreating the puzzles, the management of resources. They also shouted out Persona as an influence in the game too. So I stopped by this just because it was Akupara, and they've published a lot of stuff that I've liked in the past. Like, the second time I'll bring up Rain World in this episode. But yeah, I enjoyed this too, so I'm glad you made that last minute switch.
Yeah, I played it too, and it did give me all the games, that the vibes that you said, Resident Evil, Killer 7. I even think like it sort of got that MGS2 like first person sort of shooty shoot. But beyond Persona, I got big Danganronpa vibes.
Yeah.
I know it's the first person, the way it plays is a little bit different, but the actual school setting and the lore and the characters were incredibly Danganronpa-esque. So that one is Sorry We're Closed from Alamode Games and Akupara Games 2024. And we've got a demo on Steam, so if you want to check that out, check the links in the show notes. Katie, your last game is Fretless. And before you talk about it, we have an interview here from two of the devs, of the four devs on the game. We have an interview now with Jeff Linville, who does sound and music at Ritual Studios on Fretless, and Connor Smith, who's the artist at Ritual Studio on this one.
My name is Jeff Linville. I do sound and music on our game Fretless.
And I'm Connor Smith, and I'm the artist for Fretless.
All right, what's Fretless?
Fretless is a music RPG. Also, we also say a guitar RPG. Yeah. Insert laugh. So Fretless is a game where you wield different instruments and you fight with musical turn-based combat.
So cards,
riffs.
SNES style RPG, turn-based. Yeah. What should players expect in this one?
So players can expect like a 10 to 12 hour long game where they're going to collect different musical instruments, different like mods, so like strings and guitar pickups and stuff for synthesizer, and you basically will be battling musical enemies along your way to the end of the game at the Battle of the Bands.
Music permeates the whole game.
Yes.
Can you talk about the role of music in this one?
Yes. Everything about the game is musical. It's filled with musical puns. The game has like a very like whimsical kind of like charming tone, I guess you could say. So like all we have like these little critters like a flute finch. It's a little bird with a flute for a nose. We've got the bellflowers. You can run into the bellflowers and they play a song, or they play like a note, but the note will go with the backing track of the music, and all the backing track or all the music in combat is synced up to like a BPM backing track. So all of your riffs are musical samples, and you put them in an order, and you're kind of like writing music, arranging music to do your turns.
It basically, not to cut you off, but it basically allows for you to be a musician when you don't feel like you could be one. It enables something inside of you that's, even if you mess up, you're still doing well. And if you do it right, you're going to do really well. Because we have rhythmic elements as well that, if you want to say any more.
Yeah, there's something called the crescendo. It's kind of like a limit break in Final Fantasy. It's basically you kind of power up during battle, and then you hit the button on the amplifier, and you get, it's actually on the screen right now, so it's easy to talk about. You get like a sequence kind of like Guitar Hero. You can think like notes kind of fly in, you do your stuff, and then like a big animation happens, and you do like a big attack. But again, it's all synced to the beats of the music, so...
There's a beautiful marriage of art and music in this one, so I can ask you both the question. How do you come up with the enemy designs and the music that accompanies their attacks and their existence?
Yeah, I could start with that. So originally we designed the enemies first, and we're like, oh, this would be cool, this would be cool. But we realized soon that if we started with the music first and see what would sound better, and our musician would be able to create something that has a unique identity, then design the art around that, it actually made everything just sync together.
Yeah, basically what Connor said, we'll start with like an instrument that I can play or I'm familiar with, or that's very melodic, very pretty, what have you, very heavy metal, and then we'll be like, okay, you know, let's try to make an enemy about this. Sorry, I'm like turning away. So like an enemy later in the game that's not in the demo, which is probably like our favorite. They're all musical puns, by the way. So we have one in this demo called Percussion Room, and it's like a percussion. It's called an idiopan is the instrument, and it's got a like its mushroom head. But we have an enemy later in the game. I don't know. It's called an oboa constrictor, like an oboe.
Good.
But it's like a big snake, so that's a really cool enemy. We have like a xylomander.
Yeah.
It's like a lizard, you know, like a... I don't even know what the original...
It's like an axolotl, which I have at home. It's my little mini xylomander. But basically, yeah. It's an axolotl with like little keys on his back of like a normal xylophone. And obviously, he hits it, and that's his moves.
I have to ask, y'all are all friends, the four devs on the game.
Yeah.
Y'all went to school together. Do you have a band yourselves?
We do not have a band between us, no.
Fretless is our band, technically.
Fretless is the band.
It's our vessel.
Yes, Fretless is the band, yeah.
Tell folks at home where they can find Fretless, when it's coming out, and what they can do to help you guys out.
So you can find Fretless on Steam right now. It's only for Steam at the moment. The launch window is 2024. We don't have an exact release date. The best thing you can do for Fretless is to wishlist it on Steam. And we do have a Twitter. It's Ritual_Studios. Same with Instagram. That's mainly where we're at on social media if they want to get in contact with us.
Last question. Favorite turn-based RPG ever? I'm putting you on the spot, so that's a tough one.
You know what's crazy about that one? I don't like turn-based games.
Yeah. Damn.
And I made a game that I like to play. So I think that kind of broke my element of, like, I did something that I don't usually am comfortable with, and we made something that I could totally enjoy, even though that's not my style. So I feel like that's, like, warms my heart a little bit. That, like, it turned me over.
Do you like action RPGs? Is that your thing?
Well, I feel like I played a Mario RPG. Yeah. A little bit, but this is, like, my game. It's, like, Okami and stuff like that. So I love Zelda as well. So I guess all the RPG elements, but... I was never really into it, and then working on this project over these years, it kind of fell in love with this genre, and making something that's our own game, we can do what we want, so made a game that you can totally enjoy if you don't like turn-based games as well.
Divinity Original Sin 2.
Yeah. Very good. So you've been to the Larian booth already, right?
Yes, I have. Yes, I'm very intimidated by the booth, and I'm really scared. I haven't played Baldur's Gate yet. I'm really scared to start it because I don't know if I'll be able to stop.
Yeah, you got a game to ship.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yes. And Dragon's Dogma as well. I want to play that, but I'm scared to start that. So,
guys, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate you.
All right, Katie, what were your thoughts on Fretless?
Oh, my God, Fretless. I think Fretless, above any game that I played, has my heart. More than all the others. It is, oh my God, you can just like feel the love that's put into the making of this game. So it is an old school turn-based RPG, but with the emphasis on music. So everything is music-based. Your combat is music-based. You have your weapon is an instrument. In the demo, a guitar or a bass. Depending on what you're using, the music will be a little different. Your attacks will be different. The environment is music. Walking around, like the backing track is always there, but then the things that you do line up with the backing track so that it all flows seamlessly and sounds great. Like walking through, there's flowers. You pit them. They're like little bell flowers, and they make little bell chime sounds. And within the first... 20 seconds of me like moving and like actively playing, I was like, oh, there's like flowers over there. I'm going to move. And at first I was like, oh, they're moving when I move through them. That's great attention to detail. And then I was like, oh my God, they're making bell chimes. Like it's little things like that. There's like mini games with frogs in a pond and you have to like figure out like almost like the song that they're doing and like put it, sing, like music it back to them words. But like the frogs are making music, like everything's music. The combat is gorgeous. It is one, the animations are fantastic. Like each combat animation for each different action that you take is so detailed. The music that it's making while you're doing it is detailed. And also the thing I really liked that's kind of a spin on the RPG, the turn-based RPG, is that you are not just picking from the same things each time you have a turn. It is card-based. So you kind of have a deck, but like, don't think of it like a card game. Like, it is not a deck-building card game. It's a kind of like a action-building. Like, you're building up your roster of moves. So then each turn, you'll get so many of your moves as options. Mm-hmm. So that kind of makes it so that each turn, you're thinking it through more instead of just being like, attack, 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 heal, attack. No, you're going, oh, I can string together I can shield, and then this other card attacks for the amount that I'm shielding. So you kind of have to see how the cards that you get kind of sync up together. And then you line them up, and then you do like three cards. So three actions in sequence, and it'll kind of like almost like its own little mini song. That's amazing. It's just so good. And it's these four gentlemen who like went to college together, have been working on this game for a couple years, and then they realize like, oh, this is building traction. You know what? We're going all in on this. We're making this game full time. Got a publishing deal, and they're all in on it. And I was so happy to be able to stand up from the demo and look at them and say, I love this game. This is really, really good. Like, mm-hmm. I can't wait to play this game. And you can pick up modifiers for your weapons. You can pick up a capo or new strings. And then you can swap out weapons. You can be like, you know what? I want to run with my base for a little while and put your modifiers on that. It's really good. I love it so much.
Yeah, for all of my Kingdom Hearts sickos out there, like, it has the Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories sort of combat system to it. So that spoke to me as a person who has really only played Chain of Memories extensively. But music is integral. There's tons of different instruments. And then the thing that I really liked in the chat that I don't know if it's in the chat or not, but they are targeting a 10 to 12 hour RPG, which,
perfect.
You know, I'm not going to talk smack about other RPGs of, you know, this ilk, but some of them overstay their welcome a lot, including some that we've talked about in one of our previous PAX shows. But it's one that 10 to 12 hours is something that's palatable, that gets me excited. Music's at the core. Fretless is one that, like, I also wholly recommend you check out. There is a demo on Steam if any of Katie or my words interest you in any way.
There's one other note with Fretless's demo that I just wanted to highlight. In addition to the seamless combat with the music and the animations, I loved the fact that the move selection you chose in combat impacted the actual syncopation of the music in combat. So let's say you pick two of the same move and a third different move. The first two beats of the song would repeat, and then you would get a different syncopation for the third one. Like, each move had its own little mini syncopation within the overall flow of the music. And it's really rare in my experience that music does that in a game. It felt weirdly evocative of, like, sort of like a hi-fi rush, though those games play nothing alike. Sonically, I was reminded of that. And I also loved that there were these, like, immediately intuitive combat, like, build-ups, like, almost like limit breaks involving gain and echo and these sort of status effect things that would feel totally normal in any other JRPG. But I will also just echo once again, if I could walk off the PAX floor this year with any one game to just finish and play in its completion, Fretless would be my choice of all the games. It felt, at least as the demo, perfectly paced, well-contained. It ended with the boss fight that I thought was super engaging. And it was engaging enough to where I walked away from the demo like, yay, I beat the boss. And, like, give me the rest of this game. And I think the rest of them felt like, oh, I'm getting a preview behind the curtain. Fretless felt, like, incredibly well-envisioned for what it is.
It felt perfect. Like, I had notes for most games that I'd played. Even Lucid, I had a couple notes. This one, I was like, I have no notes. This is perfect. Like, I don't know what else to say. And also, if you are, like, a music nerd, like a classic music nerd, it is riddled with little, like, 70s classic rock jokes and, like, just in the character names and stuff like that. That's something that you'll just be like, oh, and it just kind of makes you happy as you play through.
Yeah, this and Enter the Chronosphere were the two that I heard the most about that I didn't get a chance, other than Lucid. So those are the top three. That I heard the most about, that, like, I feel like the word of mouth was getting around with the rest of the people at PAX, because I feel like if I would have gone there on maybe Thursday or Friday, I would have gotten a chance to play it. But every time I went back, like, on Saturday for a brief moment, and then on Sunday, there were people lined up to play Fretless. So happy for them that they the word of mouth was so strong, and I have not heard a single negative thing about it from anyone who played it.
Friends, that was Fretless. from Playdigious Publishing. The developer on that one is Ritual Studios. Check that out. Demo available on Steam. Our last game that I'm going to talk about really quickly here is one called Scramble Star Crossing. Like I said, I was a puzzle game sicko this PAX East. And so this one, if you've played Bust a Move or Tetris Attack or any games like that, it is very much a match three. You have a horizontal space where you're playing, though. Your character's in the middle, and your job is to suck up stars of different colors. You can only suck up, you know, a specific star color at the same time, and then shoot those stars at, you know, stars of the same color to create match threes. It is competitive, though, so as you're, you know, making matches, you're throwing, as you will, you'll throw other stars and junk at your opponent's field, and then beyond that, there are characters that have special powers. It is very reminiscent of the games that I talked about earlier, but, you know, it was a game that I picked up in 2 minutes and immediately was like, oh, I'm a sicko who plays puzzle games. This is entirely my ish, especially when I played, not the devs, but a friend of the devs who was just sitting there sort of playing people one-on-one. And I said, go easy on me. Like, I'm really bad at games, which typically is correct. But within 2 minutes, he was just like, hey, wait a second. You play puzzle games. I need to actually play you here because you're kicking my butt right now because I was going easy. It's got a single player mode supposedly that's coming for it. And the cool part for this one is that, of course, demo available on Steam. But the thing that they're doing is instead of doing early access, what they're doing is they're just updating this demo a lot. So you're not going to get the full experience in there, but they're continually adding things to the demo. So when you download the demo, if you listen to the show, for example, 3 months from now, there may be additional content in the demo that you won't get when you download it today. Did anyone else play this one, or is it just me?
I dabbled briefly. It was
fun.
You
dabbled, tell me.
I had fun. It's match three.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a great time.
I don't think there's a date on this one. It's sort of coming soon, but it's one that I encourage you strongly to put on your wish list if you're a puzzle game sicko like me. From Dusk Sharp, this is Scramble Star Crossing. So those are our 12 games. Let me just go through them. Dave's selections were Animal Well, Duck Paradox, Fallen Aces. Flora's were Kind Words 2, Athenian Rhapsody, and Sorry We're Closed. Katie's were Enter the Chronosphere, Deathbound, and Fretless. And mine were Lucid, Let's Revolution, and Scramble Star Crossing. Do you guys want to do a rapid fire round of other cool games, or do you want to do questions first?
Ooh, I could do a quick rapid fire.
Okay.
Super quick.
Let's talk about a game first, being published by Null Games. This one is Tape to Tape. It's a roguelite hockey game a la NHL 94. For Tape to Tape, three of us on this call played it. Dave and I kicked you, Katie, and friend of the show, Joseph Hooper's butt 5-1, but it is a, you know, NHL 94 style roguelite where the fields and teams get wild and wacky. Tell me about your team and how you're a loser, Katie.
Okay, our goalie was terrible. Let in like three different like civ goals. Like there's leakers. I'm like, what are you doing? Are you paying attention? No?
Great. Did you just call him a civilian?
Yeah, civ goal. Anyway, moving on. So much fun. Different teams have different abilities. They have different rinks that have their own special characteristics. Really thoughtfully made. Great game. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it was a blast. From like the second the game started, I was like, oh, this is good. I love this. And then me and Jacob started pouring goals in. I was like, okay. I really love this.
Great. That's awesome. We play the golfers,
and we our special ability is you could throw your like stick like you would throw a golf club if you're Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
And then the fields even changed. There was one where it was like a golf course where the face-off circles were bunkers, and there was a fairway in the middle, so the puck moved a little bit faster. We saw a soccer field where there were like players blocking free kicks that just sort of were on the field. It's dope. This one again, from it's in early access now, Tape to Tape from Excellent Rectangle and Null Games. The next rapid fire one, I'm going to throw to Dave to talk about The Art of Flight.
Yeah, so real quick, The Art of Flight is a top scrolling shoot 'em up, old school arcade style pixel art. If you played, you know, Galaga or Space Invaders, stuff like that. The cool thing about this one is that instead of collecting the normal shoot 'em up power ups, what you're doing most of the time is collecting other ships. So you save a ship, it joins your formation, and then you can pause the game at any time to rearrange your formation to focus fire or to avoid obstacles. It was really cool. I talked with the developer about how that came to be, and I had a good time playing it. So, like, I like shoot 'em ups. I'm very bad at them, but I like just, you know, it's a very classic style of game. So I'm excited for that one.
The Art of Flight. Katie or Flora, did you have any you wanted to talk about here?
I got a couple. One is Creek's Front Tactics. It is XCOM, but a visual style like a 90s mech game, but XCOM Tactics. Great. That's by Toge?
Yeah, Toge Productions is publishing that one.
Coffee Talk, yeah. Yeah, wild. Developer and publisher.
Crazy.
It was a lot of fun. If you like XCOM and you're like mech, customizable mechs, that's it. It's fun.
Demo on Steam.
And then my last one is I wanted to touch Path of Exile 2 because I enjoyed the first one. It's a Diablo 2 like, basically. It is like, oh, you like Diablo 2? We're going to make a lot more of that. Path of Exile 2, I think, is much improved. From the little bit that I played, I actually really liked it. I didn't expect to put much time into it. I think when it comes out, I'm going to play it because it is a lot more intentional. That's kind of the best word I can do with as far as the combat and the enemies. It is like I ran into a mini boss who was extremely detailed, had stages. I had to be a lot more strategic. I wasn't just running around and, you know, meleeing everything in sight and moving on with my life. Like I had to be thoughtful about things, which I really appreciate. It looks beautiful. I'm looking forward to it.
Path of Exile 2.
That
Flora,
is
quick hits.
One game that I want to mention is just an honorable mention in terms of having memorable like marketing / PAX booth is a game called Part of You. And it was a 3D adventure game where it takes place at like a carnival and it's got this weird sardonic sense of humor. And the thing that drove me to it were there are these posters with like a sad tomato that said like divorce, walk it off. And other such phrases. And just a really bizarre showing. And in standing there watching people play it, I decided I would sit there and try it myself. And one of the gimmicks was it involved like puzzle solving by flipping people's facial expressions around, which is something I've never seen. And after the demo, I noticed they had a penny pressing machine where they provided pennies at the booth, and you could sit there and make one of those posters, like the tomato divorce walk it off things. And so I sat there after playing this utterly bizarre game that I couldn't finish and pressed pennies at the PAX booth.
Amazing.
And I think to myself, like, that was something that even if I was lukewarm on the actual demo, I will remember that because of the booth. And I just want to say for any developers listening or anyone like thinking about a PAX display next year, more gimmicks. I love the gimmicks. I will come for the gimmicks, even if it's not my genre. And then the remaining game, I think, that sort of left an impression in my headspace was word of mouth from Matt Storm, friend of the show, and it was called Heading Out. And just a driving game, black and white, choose your own adventure in between. And it had this sort of... It evoked a game that I wrote a review for years ago called Neo Cab, where you had this sort of like resource management in between car ride sharing. And so in this game, you're both running from the cops, you're navigating between like waypoints on a map, you're having to think about refilling your gas and also having money to refill your gas, you're picking up hitchhikers who might rob you or might pay you, all sorts of in between things that made the world and the story feel kind of interesting, because to be honest, I don't really care that much about driving games. But I got to play it on a Steam Deck on the floor, and I thought it was like perfect for that sort of handheld format. I would like to see what this full game ends up looking like.
Heading out, I've got a couple quick hits. Buckshot Roulette is one. Katie, did you end up playing this one?
Yes. I'm very excited for it.
Inscription vibes. You're in a dingy club and it's got Inscription vibes, and you sit down at a poker table and there's a shotgun in the center of the actual card table itself, and you either shoot yourself or shoot the person across from you with real bullets or blanks. So it is truly a game of Russian roulette. There are power-ups you can collect, stuff like, you know, drink a beer and it'll eject the shell that's in the shotgun. There's a handcuff that says you're going to get two shots on your opponent so you can shoot them twice and kill them. It's a relatively short game. It is like a 20-minute experience all in. I actually actually have a review code for this one. And then it's got like a double or nothing mode where you can then, there's a money component that's added to the game. Buckshot Roulette, it's cool as shit. Please check it out.
Yeah, I agree.
Excellent. Ollie Frog Toad Skater is a Tony Hawk game, but with a frog. We have an interview now with Philip, who's developing the game.
Could you tell us about Ollie Frog Toad Skater and what the game's all about?
Sure. So this is Ollie Frog Toad Skater, the amphibious skateboarding game where it's easy to be steezy. So it's amphibious in every sense of the word. Not only are you a frog, but you can also go underwater as well as on land, which opens up that trick set a bit more, as well as just like the types of environments we can play with. It's very much built to be very true to the Tony Hawk 4 and Thug 2 set of mechanics. So on top of just like having all the basic physics work as you would expect and your trick inputs, we also have all sorts of navigation, bells and whistles like wall rides, wall plants, spine transfers, being able to tweak manuals and grinds, flatlands, but also having an onboard mechanic where you could just go around and talk to people.
When playing those games in the Tony Hawk series, were there, you said the specific games that you pulled from, but would love to know if there's stuff in those games that you always wish you had that you were able to put into this game.
Let's see, stuff that they always, well, one thing that we did implement recently was Nada spins, but like the number of tricks you can do on those is kind of limited, so we want to maybe expand that a bit. In terms of just like design and other like feature sets, I forget if it was, which Tony Hawk was it, but there was like a freak out feature where after you bail, if you mash a button, your character will like get angry and start like breaking their board or something. And I was also just a big fan of, Thug 2 has a feature where you can play as guest characters and they have their own like little crappy board things. I have this one concept of a frog who's like a police officer on a Segway, and I think it would be really fun to dish him out. The character design's been made forever, but I don't know what I'll have bandwidth to make him. In terms of map design, I also just really like Canada from Tony Hawk 3. Just a very nice, cool open map, very memorable, very iconic IMO.
Outside of the Tony Hawk series, are there other games that you're pulling inspiration from?
Let's see. So in terms of just like the color palette and vibe, it's a lot of a little bit of Kirby Air Ride I get a lot of comparisons
nice.
With, which is kind of fair because I did rent the crap out of that from Hollywood Video. Eventually ended up buying it. But also just like there's this common trend among like Asian American artists like myself and a lot of my friends where this is a very common depiction of frog, and putting it on a skateboard just seemed like the right thing to do. And now here we are at our second PAX East and our third PAX ever.
Are there any other characters besides Frog?
Currently, just because of like the animation set, we'll probably just stick with Frog right now. You can kind of fake an axolotl by like giving the current Frog model like gills, but in terms of like salamanders and lizards, it might be a bit trickier because they're different skeletons, and I'm basically the only animator on this, and this game has a lot of animations. Oh my god. Like, we're talking like hundreds, even if you're not including like the Switch goofy variants. And all, like, the different transitions to, like, coming down from a quarter pipe and, like, switch and then reverting backside versus frontside. So the math gets really crazy. Even just, like, going from tweaking from flatland to flatland is, that's N-square combinatorics. So I have to know how to go from switch foot pogo to, like, 1 foot nose manual or something.
So we were able to play the tutorial and the arcade mode at PAX. There is a demo available, so I'd love to know what's in the demo on Steam and then what's planned as far as modes for the final game.
Sure. So right now the Steam demo has 4 playable levels. It has a tutorial. It has a 2-minute arcade mode. It has a more open-ended look at one of our semi-aquatic levels. And it has a more urban level with like some side quest NPCs that you would see out of like a Tony Hawk Underground game. And it also has, and this was recently added, there's a little, a very sparse split screen mode where you could just like do a 2-minute arcade run basically with your friends, and whoever like gets the highest score gets tallest pedestal basically.
And then what's planned for the full release, and do you have those details sort of in place yet?
My release window is going to be probably late summer this year. And we're shooting it around like 6 or 7 skate parks, complete with a single player short story campaign mode, just to round it out.
And that'll be PC only?
We're starting with just PC. We want to do a couple of consoles at some point. We've had some publishers stop by and show interest, both in like the initial release or maybe even like helping us support it a bit. Yeah, we want to get this on Switch at some point because we get lots of questions and lots of begging, and please put this on a portable console or something. I think this also works on Steam Deck as well. There might be some technical difficulties, but we don't have enough customers to like validate that on one front.
Amazing. Philip, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Philip Wojtowicz, thank you for that interview about Ollie Frog Toad Skater. We've got one more interview here. This one is about Starvaders, which is a fusion of deck building and grid-based tactics. Really think like, you know, we talked about Fretless and how it has cards, that sort of mechanic. And then also there's a Mega Man Battle Network style like grid that you're playing on. I'm going to let Eddie, who is the lead designer on the game, tell you more about it now.
Starvaders is a tactical roguelike deck builder with a unique grid-based tactics twist. I think the easiest way to explain it is it's kind of like a turn-based tactics version of Space Invaders. So you're controlling this mech, and you play cards to move the mech and use attacks, and there's these alien invaders that come from the top of the grid, and they move slowly towards the bottom each turn. And your goal is to destroy these invaders before they reach the bottom three rows of the grid. And it's a roguelike deck builder, which means that after each combat, you get to get new rewards, you add new cards to your deck, upgrade your cards, get new powerful artifacts that change the way you play. And you're trying to defeat these increasingly challenging encounters until you beat the final boss, if you can. And yeah, throughout the run, you'll encounter like a huge variety of different upgrades and cards to create combos and synergies that hopefully will break the game in the way that we want you to.
What was the inspiration behind the grid-based system for both moving your characters, for the enemies, and then for the weapons that you're sort of shooting vertically into your enemies?
Yeah, so I think our game is a mix of a lot of different games from a lot of different sources. For example, firing bullets, that's very reminiscent of like something like Mega Man Battle Network, for example.
That's exactly what I was thinking. When I played that game, that is the game I got the biggest vibes of.
Yeah, yeah. So that a lot of the firing bullets thing comes from there. And then the idea of the enemies moving down slowly. There's actually a board game called Bullet. That was like the initial spark for this game was me thinking, what if Bullet had a roguelike deck builder version of it? So that in Bullet, there's a lot of bullets on the grid, and then you have cards, and you're trying to match patterns to defeat these bullets. But we've kind of rethemed it into Space Invaders instead, which then a lot of other things came naturally. Like, they get to the bottom, and they start... You have to prevent them from getting to the bottom, and you move left to right to shoot them down. Yeah.
Can you explain the burn mechanic? Because each... turn, you get a limited number of moves based on the card you have in your hand, but you can almost play more of them with consequence. So can you explain that burn system?
Yeah, of course. So in our game, we have something called the overheat mechanic. There's an energy system where whenever you play a card, you'll generate heat. However, you do have a limit, so you can't play all the cards in your hand every turn. If you go over the limit, you'll actually burn the card. And what that means is the card becomes a burned card, which is unplayable, a dead card in your hand later in the encounter. So you do have a limit, but it's a soft limit because you can always go over it. However, at the risk, of course, of potentially weakening yourself for the rest of the battle. And so there's this risk-reward kind of pull every single turn in this game where... Should you overexert right now just to get a little bit more power because maybe there's a lot of enemies there right now, or keep the card for later, making sure you have enough abilities to take care of the later enemies coming up?
Beyond cards, there's also upgrades to those cards and artifacts. Is that right?
Yes. Between each encounter, you get to either add cards to your deck, and these cards are all like a different variety, different abilities to help you. But each card also has a variety of upgrades that are possible. And these upgrades are what we call components, where each card has like maybe like 5 to 10 types of upgrades possible that change the way the card interacts with other cards, with itself. yeah, that adds a lot of variability and a lot of like potential synergies, archetypes that can come out of that. And of course, we have these artifacts, which are these very powerful passive abilities that will change the rules of the game in ways to make you stronger. Yeah.
And then I think I got to the first boss, the big sort of slime that splits into smaller enemies. Lost on that, and there was a shadowy figure that sort of was taunting me. Can you tease us about sort of the story that the players will experience with this one?
Yeah, of course. So there's this grand mystery as you play this roguelike where you're trying to figure out where these invaders came from, why are they attacking the Earth, and who is this mysterious being, of course, at the end of each run that is, like, helping you, or are they? And why are we rewinding time to the start of the invasion every single time you play, right? So all these questions hopefully will be well answered as you play throughout the game, and with perhaps a secret ending as well.
If players are curious about Starvaders, what's the best thing that they could do for you?
Yeah, you can check out the demo. It's on Steam right now, and the demo contains a lot of content. You can try it out. Would be a huge boost for us if you could wishlist our game as well. That always helps us indie devs very hard, and that like breaks through the algorithm for Steam. And we also have a Discord. What a really active community if you want to join the conversation, and we're hosting a beta test on the Discord that has a lot more content of the game. For example, the second class is in the beta, and just as a hint, in the first class, for example, I explained the overheat mechanic. That's actually a mechanic that's exclusive to the first class only. The second class has its own unique energy system as well.
Starvaders, check it out. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Eddie, for those thoughts about Starvaders. So to Speak is, I think, the last game that we're going to talk about, Dave.
Yeah, So to Speak is a Japanese language learning game, and I put it on here. I talked with a developer named Eric while I demoed the game, or while I was waiting to demo it, and I just really appreciate the approach to language learning in the game. Not so much like dressing up grammar drills as a game, and more so making a kind of puzzle game out of the experience of stepping off an airplane and not being able to read the signs. So that was an interesting approach to language learning, and I appreciated that. So I want to shout out So to Speak. I think there's a demo on Steam for that one right now.
Let me check you. I played that one too, and it was very like, is Richard Scarry the right thing to evoke here? Like, it was very like storybook.
Yeah.
Maybe not a game, but like a very cool thing that I'm very glad exists.
Right.
Is there a demo on Steam? There is a demo on Steam that you can try now. All right, y'all. Those were all the video games. Can I hit you with some fast questions?
Yeah.
Bring it.
From Matt Storm. How awesome is Matt Storm?
Oh my goodness.
They are the best. Simply.
Unmeasurable.
Excellent. A real question. Maybe what was the most surprising find out of all the games that you played? I think Fretless is up there. And some of the puzzle games. Scramble Star Crossing was pretty dope. I played Collapsis 2, which is a puzzle game, which is a match 4, but it's on a tablet. And as you turn the tablet, blocks fall in the direction that the tablet is turned. Puzzle game sicko. Collapsis. Any other surprises?
I feel like I have to repeat Kind Words 2 because that's a game that just no conception of existing. It got announced several months ago and just slipped my radar. I feel like even Fretless, even though that is the game that I'm like want to play the most right now, that feels like Chrono Trigger but Rock Band. And so like that's great, but Kind Words 2 is the genuine like jaw gut punch level of surprise.
I think for me it was Animal Well. Because I'm like, well, I've played a lot of platforming Metroidvanias. What's going to be so special about this? Why is there so much hype? And the vibes are unlike any other Metroidvania I've played. And it surprised me. It really shocked me how much I enjoyed that demo.
Yeah, I'll echo that. And as someone who, again, like the only thing I really knew about it was I knew what the game's art style looked like, and I knew it had Donkey backing it. So I was like, well, see what this Donkey published game is all about. And it's like, as soon as I sat down and started playing, I was like, oh, okay. So that was a good surprise. And then the other ones, you know, the surprises like The Art of Flight and, so to speak, the things that I had never heard of before going to PAX. And then just both of those, I just saw them and was like, there's no line. I'll go check this game out and come away with just the idea, you know, or reinforcing the idea that people are out there, often these solo or like small team developers are just making really cool, creative stuff.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from Adam Gumbert asking, what's your favorite dev or PR interaction?
I think it was sitting down and playing Lucid with Eric, the developer, sitting next to me and just talking to him while playing the game. And he is the loveliest human. Oh my goodness. I'm like, I am rooting for you so hard. Yeah, just a wonderful human. Also, the guys from Fretless too were just peaches.
Yeah, I had a really great conversation with Eric, the developer of So To Speak, partly about the game, but partly about our approaches to learning languages as someone who, you know, learned a language from scratch, like in my early 30s. So we had a good conversation about that. His family was running around, and like, there's like kids and people in the game. They're all voiced by his family, including his small child, which was super cute. So it was just a good conversation about the game, but also the approach behind the game that I could really relate to.
Yeah, and at the risk of being a broken record, I got to talk with the developer of Kind Words 2 one-on-one for the entirety of my duration with the demo. And so it was really cool to walk up there with nothing but questions and praise for the original game and just being able to organically gush about the review I wrote for Kind Words years ago and then just continual astonishment and laughing with mirth like about some of the things other players had left and the surprises and the mechanics that had evolved. And so any of those one-on-one interactions are always my favorite, I think.
I want to shout out Lisa Moyer from, I'm bad with names today, from Whitethorn, who was running my demo for Magical Delicacy. Made me feel super at home. Another Canadian, a fellow Canadian, but had a fridge with waters and cheese sticks. Essentially, from the sound of it, she was a journalist at some point and then moved to PR and then remembered, like, what were the worst things about doing demos and about PAX? And let's do comfy chair in the demo spot and then snacks and drinks for my journo folks and my content creators. So shout out to Lisa at Whitethorn. Last question comes from Travis, and I'm going to let you abstain from this one, Dave, only because you don't know Travis that well. Travis asks, top picks for games I would have loved if I could have gone.
Oh,
I'll start. Star Vaders is a Travis-ass game, and then I did not play this one, but in the Whitethorn booth, shout out Whitethorn for, one, their crazy amount of accessibility that they are putting in all of their games. They have a VP of accessibility that works on accessibility for all their titles. Botany Manor is a Travis-ass video game, so please check out Botany Manor. Flora, you're nodding.
I definitely think so. I played that one last year at PAX, and I feel like Travis mentioned it in conversation with me, so that checks out. Another game that I didn't get to play, but just from vibes alone, kind of felt Travis-y, was Woodo. I didn't get a chance because the line was just 2 hours plus every time I went by the booth, but it was very much like a game like Unpacking, but the thing was it was like a 3D game with like a very satisfying tactile and auditory sort of feel. And from what Travis has said about other games previously, I feel like there might be something in there, weirdly.
This looks incredible. It looks like Noor Play With Your Food, but you know, Unpacking. Damn. Katie, any suggestions?
I don't know if he played Animal Well at a previous PAX, but I would say Animal Well and Lucid, because Travis loves platforming Metroidvania. So either of those are both shaping up to be really good ones, so.
Awesome. Those are all the questions that we had for the show, and therefore that is the end of our mega show for PAX East 2024. Again, shout out to ReadPop for giving media access to Flora, Katie, and myself. We very much appreciate it. Dave Jackson, thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate you too. Tell us about you and your programs.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me again. Thank you for including me in the PAX plans. It made it just so much better. And this has been a good time. And if people want to find what I do two podcasts because I'm a maniac. The first one's Tales from the Backlog, Backlog Game Reviews. And again, we deep dive with no spoilers for a long time. And then we warn you when the spoilers start. So if you want to find an episode to try it out, you can pick a game that you either like have already played and you want to hear someone talk about the story, or pick a game that you are curious about but don't want spoilers for, because that's the whole point of the show. That's why I made it that way. And again, Flora's been on the show twice, The Last of Us Part 2, Like a Dragon Gaiden, and Jacob was on for Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, a very special game. So yeah, that's Tales from the Backlog. I also have another show. It's called A Top 3 Podcast. That one's a much simpler pitch. It's top three lists. It's a comedy show. So those are my two shows. You can find them by going to the link that Jacob's going to put in the resources that I'm going to send to him.
I already got you, Dave. Don't worry. Yeah. And you're on Twitter at both Real Dave Jackson and the acronym for your pod.
Yeah, my personal Twitter is at Real Dave Jackson. And my Tales from the Backlog Twitter is at TFTBL Pod. And there's a top three podcast Twitter, but I haven't used it in a long, long time. So don't go there.
Don't go there. We will not call it X. Dave Jackson, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find all things Left Behind Game Club at Left Behind Club on Twitter, Left Behind Game Club on Instagram. And if you want to talk to Flora, me, Katie, or Dave Jackson, you can find us in the Discord at leftbehindgame.club/discord. Let's just finish with Katie. Where can you be found on the webs?
I'm on the Twitters. I'm Lesperak, L-E-S-P-E-R-A-K.
A criminally underfollowed Twitter account. Please find her, Flora.
I am also on Twitter at LunoNarrativeFM, and you can check my written work at epiloggaming.com.
Flora does words good. Please check it out. And you can find my BS at Jacob McCourt on Twitter at, oh my God, I'm dying, JACOBMCCOURT. I'm also on TikTok. We didn't even talk about how I went viral on the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'll include that as a note in the show notes for those who care. Look in the show notes. The last note says, and Jacob went viral, and there's a link. It's dumb.
Who's
You're
Tracer?
Laugh at me.
Who's
Enjoy.
Tracer, Jacob?
Shut up, Katie. Shut up. Shut up. And on that note, shout out Mike Ruffalo. And that, my friends, is Wellness Game. Oh, that doesn't work. And that, my friends, is a lot of video games we left behind at PAX to go home and sleep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Shut up, Katie.
I was waiting for a Tracer moment, and I forgot after, like, the first 20 minutes. I was, like, I had that in my notes of, like, wait for the and it just totally slipped.
Do you find yourself playing older games and wishing that there were new discussions about those games? Enter Tales from the Backlog. Hi, I'm Dave Jackson, and on each episode, I'm joined by a guest to break down those games that may be stuck in your ever-expanding backlog. Each episode looks at one game in depth, focusing on mechanics, story, music, and other aspects with no spoilers until a clearly marked spoiler wall in the middle. If you've played the game, go ahead and climb that spoiler wall and enjoy in-depth story discussions, and if not, jump out when we warn you and maybe go play that game for yourself. We have over 100 episodes in the feed, everything from Disco Elysium to Tunic to discussion episodes about how to get into horror games, and if games actually need to be fun, or if they have more to offer. I guarantee that there's something in there for everybody. Once again, that's Tales from the Backlog, available wherever your podcasts are found.
Do you feel like you're the only person in your circle who wants to go deep about video games regularly?
We were like that too, until now.
Welcome to Crossplay Conversations, the brand new bi-weekly topical video game podcast from Luke Lewis,
Joseph Hooper,
and Jacob McCourt.
With many years of breaking it down separately on shows like the Left Behind Game Club, Player Player Podcast, and Lukewarm Games, the gang is finally coming together to publish their gaming group chat in audio form every other week.
Expect roundtable reviews of the latest games, profiles of upcoming indies, and insightful conversations about essential topics in the video game industry. All with a mostly positive, insightful, and fun style.
Help us out by subscribing on your podcast platform of choice to get the first episodes delivered straight to your feed.
And follow us on Twitter @CrossplayConvos for updates about the show.
Cheers and happy gaming.